Welcome back to Jump Scare. I'm Betty B. Deadly.
And I'm Shad.
And this week, we've come back from a little hiatus.
Yes, thanks to the lovely folks at Spectrum, we were sans internet for several days. Several days.
A week, actually. A week. The longest week ever. And I have had no phone for about a month and a half, so thanks to a big company that starts with the letter S and ends with the letter T. So thanks. So we will be covering Waxworks from 1988.
It's 11:45. Let's go.
Imagine, if you will, an exhibit in fear.
It looks a little spooky, boys. You think we should do this?
A place that appeals to your deepest and darkest fantasies.
Ooh, scary.
Your fascination with ghosts, monsters, and the many unearthly elements of the supernatural.
Welcome to the Waxwork.
Look.
Now this is killer.
Enjoy.
Wow, the glasses from Nutty Zombies from Hell.
Lose yourself in it.
Would you like a closer look?
Really?
But whatever you do, don't step over the rope.
Welcome, my dear. We thought you were too tired to join us.
All right, I'm hypnotized.
Hey, not so fast.
Relax! A cup of coffee, we'll talk about it.
I want out of here, Sarah. I'm serious.
Getting scared?
Do I get a pretty woman in my illusion? No. No, I get a dork.
It isn't real.
What the hell did you kill him for? He'd have been perfect!
Live, my children.
Vestron Pictures welcomes you into a new dimension in terror. Waxwork.
So there are some recognizable faces in this film. We have Zach Galifianakis from Gremlins and Deborah Foreman. Many of you may know her from April Fool's Day. I know her fondly from one of my favorite movies, top five favorite romantic comedies from the 80s, Valley Girl.
Oh yeah, you even have the special collector's edition of that one.
Yeah, and the CD, and like a bajillion other versions of the movie. I think I also have it on VHS. It's like, if I was stranded on an island, that is the movie that I would take.
Okay.
One of the movies I would take, I would definitely take Valley Girl. So, oh, and the fucking top man of the hour, I should have just started off, but I guess I saved the best for last, David Warner.
Yeah, David Warner, and who, of course, is, you may know David Warner from everything. If there's been a sci-fi or horror movie made in the last 40 to 50 years, and it's had a sequel, if he wasn't in the original, he was in the sequel.
I love him, and my best friend is a vampire.
Yep. Of course, he's in, my favorite movie with him is Time After Time.
That's an excellent movie. A really fucking good movie.
Yeah, I love that movie. It just kind of is one of those ones that it came out of nowhere, and I love it. They did that TV series that a couple years ago, but it didn't catch on.
No, it did not. It was so sad.
It was a shame, too, because like the part of the charm of the original movie for me was that like Malcolm McDowell's a nerdy-looking guy. David Warner's just an Aries-looking guy, but then the new show comes out and everyone is like super sexy, carved out of, you know, marble, and I think that's why it didn't catch on with people. They were like, oh, well, this guy can't be evil. He's too good-looking.
Well.
Oh, we were missing some other people, too. You said Zach Galligan, but we missed Dana Ashbrook from Twin Peaks.
Oh, yes. Oh, I'm sorry. Did I say Galahan? I think I said Galahan.
Yeah, you did.
Sorry, I'm thinking of some other dude. So Zach Galligan.
Yeah.
And yeah, the chick from Twin Peaks.
No. Dana Ashbrook is the guy. He's like the...
Oh.
In Twin Peaks, he's like the young guy that's sleeping around with the waitress. Yeah.
Yes. He's a drug dealer. Isn't he a drug dealer? Yes.
He's everything in that show. He's all kinds of stuff.
Yeah, he has all kinds of stuff in this show. Yeah, there's... It's a group of weirdly mixed people. But, you know, it works. That chick also, the one with the blonde hair, forgot her name. She's also from something. She's done a lot of horror stuff, too. She's always, like, a side character. She reminds me of Muriel Hemingway.
Yeah.
Right? Specifically in one of the Tales from the Crypt episodes. There's an episode of Muriel Hemingway in there. She looks a lot like this girl in this movie. But there's a waxworks that's come to town, and David Warner is the, you know, curator, I guess you would say. And it's like in the like middle of a fucking neighborhood.
It's an odd place for it. It's like they're just walking, which this is one of those movies that like I love from the 80s. It's like they're all going to college, but they all live within walking distance of the college and their parents' houses. And the college has, like, you know, old school lockers out in the hallway and bells. So I was really confused. Like, they're in college, but yet it seems very high school-like. Yeah, so they're just walking to school one day, and the guy just, there's a sign out front, hey, the waxwork is opening. And they just turn around, and suddenly David Warner's there and invites them to all come tonight. Please bring some friends.
Yes, please bring some friends, because we're going to need them.
Yeah, so they show up at the waxwork that night. He tells them to come at midnight, of course. And they show up, and the door's answered by, like, a guy that's, like, 2 feet tall. And
who's a famous... He's also a recognizable face, like, in within the small people community. I don't know.
And in horror movies, too. I think he's been in a few of them.
Yeah, and in horror movies. And they're actually high school students.
Oh, are they?
Yeah, they're high school students, but they're fancy. It's like Gossip Girl, like where they're fucking super fancy, or like Dawson's Creek, which makes a lot of sense. And that makes more sense why there would be bells ringing in the thing.
Yeah, I thought they're supposed to be in college because they all are like...
I literally thought they were in college, but this is what confirms it. There's a scene where they're watching people in track, and like there's football players, and they're like in like... the football, like, the stands.
Okay.
I guess technically you could have that in college, or that is in college too, but it's high school. So, but they're just fancy, and they're, like, wealthy. So it's like...
Which is an odd choice for to build a waxwork in the middle of this neighborhood.
It's like, you know, there's a fucking mysterious waxwork museum that's just, you know, it's just gonna be there, it's cool. You know,
yeah, I don't know what the zoning laws on that are, but I bet they're pretty strict.
I'm sure. Well, it must be. Well, it's like the community that I used to live in. There's like a little market. It's like all these houses that are worth like $200,000, $300,000+.
And then that little one was at 90.
Yeah. And then there's like little market there. And then it became like an eatery. So it's now a restaurant, but it would start off as a market, but it's like in the strangest place, like smack in the middle of a residential like place. There's no other business in the area besides that one, which is cool. I mean, you know, but I mean, I welcome a waxworks. Come on down. I would love to have something cool to look at after when I get out of school.
Yeah, so they go, you know, they show up. Eventually, one of the couples decide to leave. They decide, we're not really feeling this, so they leave. The rest of them decide to all go take a look around. And there's all the exhibits in there. You know, you've got your typical, there's like a one that's obviously supposed to be a little shop of horrors. There's a, you know, a Frankenstein, all this kind of stuff. And then I believe the first one that someone goes into is the vampire exhibit.
Yeah, well, it's so crazy because you actually told me about this, but there were other things in the film.
They were cut because they couldn't get the rights to them.
Yeah, which would be, you told me about the Jason Voorhees. They're supposed
there
to be
Jason Voorhees. There would have been an exhibit of the thing.
Which is crazy because uncredited, Kane Hodder plays the Frankenstein's creature.
Yeah, this came out the same year that I believe he played Jason for the first time. So that this might have actually been him playing Jason before he played Jason in the movie.
Yeah.
If it had worked, but it did not.
Now, in the sequel to Waxworks, which is really terrible, a lot of things happen. Deborah Foreman's in it because she's actually dating the director of the first movie. And she's not in it, but she was dating the director from the first movie, Anthony Hickox or whatever. Yeah. And then they break up, terrible breakup. So she's not coming back for the second one. And in the opening of the film, like during like the probably like the first 20 minutes, there's a Jason Voorhees mask that gets picked up. Yeah. So it's kind of like, hey, five children from Village of the Damned were supposed to be, which I think it's a kind of random, or the Village of the Damned kids are supposed to be in there.
Yeah.
And then the last one was The Thing.
Yeah.
So they couldn't get the rights to any of those. So we have, as you said, we got Dracula, Jack the Ripper. There's actually a good Frankenstein's monster.
Yeah. All the exhibits are pretty good. And of course, you get the girl who's immediately drawn to the vampire exhibit. She sees the good-looking vampire guy in his cape in there. And I love how no one pays attention to the fact that when they walk up to the waxwork, that the velvet rope just drops on its own. You just hear the cling, the velvet rope falls down. They're like, okay, well, this is probably a sign that I should just walk on in and take a look at this.
Yeah, let me go investigate. You know, this is private property. I'm not supposed to actually be in touching any of the exhibits, but I'm going to go in and do some investigating. My question, out of all the people they do see, I mean, they do the wolf, a mummy, a werewolf, a mummy, a zombie. You got Phantom of the Opera, so many. Marquis de Sade. Now, the Marquis de Sade guy, Deborah Foreman, like, kind of, she's a virgin. And she's, like, obsessed with this exhibit. Like, she goes in it and, like, she doesn't want to leave. Like, she's just stuck into the whole, like, scene. And I love that scene. That's, like, one of my favorite out of all the people. Because they each go in, you know, different scenes. The Marquis de Sade one, I do like that one. That's my favorite out of the exhibits. Which is your favorite?
The Vampire one, which I was trying to tell you about.
Well, I felt like you were trying to do, like, the whole movie play-by-play. I'm just trying to pick my favorite parts. My favorite parts. Okay. But so your favorite part is the Dracula one.
Yeah. Well, I don't think they necessarily call him Dracula. He's just a vampire.
Oh, yeah. He is just a vampire, yes. He's not Dracula.
So, because of course, Dracula's public domain, but who knows? Maybe they were too close to the Universal vampires or something. I don't know. But yeah, I just love that, the vampire one, where they go in. And, of course, instantly when they go in, they change their clothes. No one seems really disturbed about that either. They just suddenly are in a fancy, you know, evening gown. And she's like, oh, okay, well, this is happening. I'll just sit down here and eat dinner with the vampires. Which, you know, they show her like, oh, I'm not sure what's going on here. Really? They put a plate of raw meat in front of you and seasoned it with blood. You couldn't figure out what was happening?
Yeah, and then, like, she's wearing all white and everyone is, like, staring at her and it just doesn't look good. And they're like, oh, would you like some more, like, juice for this sauce? Juice? Like, you need more juicy stuff on your bloody meat?
They just pour, you know, I love how they have, like, the fancy, like, you know, a little fancy thing to pour it with, too. Like, oh, here comes the waiter. He's got it on a silver platter and, like, the little napkin over his arm. Pours the blood out all over the meal because you got to be fancy.
It's really disgusting.
Yeah. And then, you know, eventually she figures out, oh, hey, they're vampires. Surprise. Everybody else already had that figured out 3 seconds into this. Plus, you looked at it and knew it was a vampire exhibit. But anyhow, they find the guy in the basement that's tied up that they've been cutting pieces off of to eat. So she was eating part of this guy at dinner.
Who is like her fiance.
In the story behind the waxwork.
Yeah.
But yeah, so yeah, that guy's strapped to the table with his leg half gone. The rats are chewing on him. The vampires are having snacks. They're, you know, they've got him strapped down like an hors d'oeuvre. They're just taking bites of him as they feel like it. And that's where you see that, like, once the people die in the waxwork, that, you know, they suddenly become part of it.
Spoiler alert.
Oh, well, this movie's 30 years old, so if you haven't seen it by now, get with it.
I'm sure there's a shit ton of people that have never seen this movie. They probably saw literally the name of the episode and they're like, oh yeah, that one with Paris Hilton. And I'm sure there's even people that still haven't seen that movie, which is House of Wax.
Which is actually not too bad.
It's okay. It's an okay movie. If we were to do like a wax, this is what we should have done. We should have done like a comparison of all the wax films. This one, House of Wax, and obviously the main one with Vincent Price.
I might own that. I'm not sure.
I think I actually might own the where there's a young Charles Bronson where you would never even fucking recognize him because he's just young.
Bronson looked like he was 40 when he was 20, so he had to be like 15 in this show in order to look like he was 30.
And he's huge too. And yeah. I mean, he's a big fucking guy. I mean, I just remember him being really big in the movie. But back to the Waxworks 88 version of the film, which I guess it's kind of like an homage maybe or like whatever to the original film.
Yeah, well, of course, you figure out with this one, the deal is that, you say spoiler alert again, you have to sacrifice so many people to the Waxworks in order to, you know, open up the ultimate evil portal and destroy the world. So he's got to get, was it 18 people?
It was a shit ton of people.
Yeah, three groups of six is what it was. So you had to do like 666.
Wow.
Yeah. So he had to get these people sacrificed, and then it was going to open up the gateway to evil and destroy the world. So another guest star in this that we forgot is Patrick McNee, plays one of the characters who comes back in the end to help stop the, you know, evil David Warner, which I love how they cleaned out the retirement home and brought all the old people to fight the monsters.
Also, John Reese Davies. Yep. There's a lot of people that you would recognize.
Yeah, some of them you would already recognize at the time, and then others went on to things. And yeah, there's a ton of people in this movie. Everybody you see and go, oh, that guy, oh, that girl. It's constantly through the whole movie.
Yeah. That's probably, the vampire scene is probably the goriest scene.
That and the werewolf's pretty good, too.
Yeah, the werewolf's pretty good. The werewolf is pretty decent. It's a pretty decent werewolf.
You know, for a lower budget movie like this, they had some really amazing effects on it. I mean, their werewolf is as good as anything you see in The Howling or American Werewolf in London, honestly.
Yeah.
Their mummy, also really good. There hasn't been a really good mummy, like, horror movie in forever. I would rather see a mummy like is in this movie than even the Brendan Fraser, and certainly more than I want the Tom Cruise one.
The artist Bob Keane spent like 18 hours a day for 8 weeks working on the monsters for this film. That's why this should look great, because he spent like, I mean, did he barely, he spent 18 hours out of a 24-hour day. So literally, he just shat, ate, and like slept.
And was making these monsters.
And was making them in his sleep, because, I mean, holy crap. I mean, and everything looks good. Like, all the scenes look fantastic.
I'd love to go to this actual waxwork.
Yeah, I would actually like to go to the waxwork, too. I don't want to be part of the waxwork, but I would like to go to it. The Night of the Living Dead, and then you can, like, pick out, like, the things that aren't, like, you know, the mummy and, like, the vampire. Are pretty decent too. Like the Night of the Living Dead one is very cute.
That's probably the most like modern one that's part of the thing.
Yeah. And in it's in black and white too. So you really get like the feel of it, which I thought is pretty neat.
Yeah. I just wish it would have been cool if they could have got the rights to do like the thing and do some more recognizable ones. I wonder if this is a case of one of those ones, if a studio now remade it. If instead of populating it with Dracula and that, if they could remake it and populate it with The Thing, American Werewolf in London, ones like that, you know?
Yeah. I mean, but even if they didn't, the screenplay was only written in 3 days. So that's pretty impressive considering.
You know, this was the 80s. I'm pretty sure there was probably drugs involved in writing that.
And in the Mr. Keene also in his 18 hours working a day.
Yeah, well, you know all those guys back at the time, like Steve Johnson and all those other effects guys, they were like, yeah, I came up with Slimer because I was high as fuck on cocaine. And he came to me and talked to me in the night and told me how to draw him.
Oh, goodness. I can't even imagine, like, even being in any kind of drugs, doing any of that. I would be totally freaked the fuck out. There's a lot of, like, different... There was 18, yeah, like you said, waxwork exhibits.
But we really only see a few up close. We see the ones that all the characters get involved in up close. And there's even a couple of them that we don't really see what happens to the people. We just see them step in, and then they're suddenly part of the exhibit.
Yeah, there was the Invisible Man, an urban legend killer, an axe murderer, a voodoo priest, a zombie, werewolf, a mummy, Marquis de Sade, a witch, Count Dracula, so it does say Count Dracula, the Phantom of the Opera, Invasion of the Body Snatchers, Pod, a demonic baby from It's Alive, an alien creature, a Cobra Man circus freak, Jack the Ripper, Mr. Hyde, and a golem.
Wow.
So there's a lot of stuff going on in the background that you actually don't see. You know, they're not really
into. You
only
really see them for a second. They do a pretty good joke near the end when the waxworks all come to life, is that there's the plant is eating someone. It's like, feed me. It doesn't say Seymour, but it just says, feed me.
Yeah, which is really cute. The flesh, the human flesh used in that vampire scene that you like, is actually rhubarb, watermelon, and strawberries. So if anyone wants to recreate that for like a party, that would be pretty dope.
I was going to say, should we do a waxwork party now?
Waxwork party. Can I just put my whole face in wax?
Well, that's up to you. But anyhow, let's talk about your Marquis de Sade scene. So throughout the movie, they make mention of the fact that, oh, Deborah Foreman's a virgin. And early on, when they're like looking for clues about the waxwork, it turns out that Zach Galligan's uncle may have been involved in somehow in with David Warner starting or trying to stop the waxwork. So they're looking through some of his things, and they find a book in there about the Marquis de Sade. And instantly, when she sees it, the book like starts glowing, and she's like hearing whipping sounds in her mind, and she's like, oh, oh, this, I'm into this.
I've never had sex, but I do want to get punished for me having sexual thoughts.
Yeah, she went from like 1 to 11 on the scale. Like, you know, she didn't just be like, oh, let's have sex. No, she went straight to the full-on BDSM. She skipped over all the baby steps you go to before that. She went straight to it.
Yeah, which doesn't make any sense. It's such a weird thing to have put on the character. Part of me is like, was it just Anthony Hickok's, like,
this is what I'm into?
Fantasy of, like, seeing her be in this position, like, all tied up and getting whipped by someone else.
Yeah, I love, like, they got the two girls to come out. They, you know, rip the back of her dress open, chain her arms up, and then the Marquis de Sade comes out and just starts whipping the shit out of her. And they have the line later on where he tells Zach Galligan, oh, you're just mad because her first orgasm wasn't at your touch, but at the touch of my whip. And man, she must have had a few because she is drenched in sweat hanging on those ropes. She's like, oh, yes.
And she does not want to leave. She's like, more, more, yeah, more.
Yeah, she was way into it. She, like I said, she skipped over all the baby steps.
Yeah, she's really into it and totally like, just in it to win it. You're right. She was so sweaty. She could have just slipped off the fucking like handcuffs or wrists.
She could have ridden right out of the cuffs and right out of her clothes and ran off down the hallway. She was so sweaty. She was like greased up and ready to go.
I like, did someone just stand by her and like spray like oil and water?
I was gonna say, who was like responsible for like, we're gonna need you to spritz her a little more. They're over there spritzing her up, keeping her sweaty for the scene.
Yeah, which is like, why are you so sweaty? You're not doing anything. You're literally just standing there getting whipped.
She was into it, apparently.
Yeah, she was.
She was way into it, and I get a feeling that Anthony Hickox might have been way into it too.
Yeah, he's like, I need a close up of her face, please. Close up, close up. More spritz, more spritz.
But so at the end, we have the great crazy scene where they fail to stop the. This is one of the classic ones of horror movies where they don't stop it. They actually do get to trigger, like, all the waxworks come into life and they're going to go out onto the world and cause chaos. But then Patrick McNee shows up in a wheelchair with all the people from the retirement home and the geriatric Avengers show up, and they are armed to the teeth. They've all got swords, axes, and they're ready to kick some ass. And there's a huge fight between them and all the Waxworks characters. That's where you see, like, the Audrey plant eating people, eating the guy, the werewolves running around causing shit, the mummies causing, you know, kicking people's ass. It's amazing. That alone probably took forever to film.
Yeah, that scene is just like, there's so much going on. When I saw Anchorman for the first time, the whole fight scene kind of like reminded me of that, because everyone is like they have the craziest, like, torches, like all kinds of crazy bullshit, like medieval fucking like battle axes, like all kinds of crazy bullshit they have.
And the charging age there is like 70 of the people doing it too. It's like they've been sitting in the retirement home sharpening this axe all this time. They're going, Grandpa, why do you need that axe? I swear to God, you never fought monsters. And he's like, oh, I did. And one day I'm going to do it again. He's just like rubbing the stone across the axe. They're like, God damn, Grandpa's crazy. Then the day comes that Grandpa's not crazy.
Nope, little did they know. He was off to fight and save the world.
Yeah, so
put the dentures in. Get ready.
This is one of those ones that when it came out on VHS that there was an unrated version of it. And I had to wait and find that. I actually found it at a video store on Beta. I had a friend that had a Beta player at the time. So we found that on Beta and watched it that way. Which is, you know, I'm not sure what the difference is on it, but I'm sure the DVDs and all that are uncut now because everything I remember is on there. So you got to wonder what the rated version was like. I bet they cut a lot out of that vampire scene. Either that or it was the Marquis de Sade scene that they cut, because, you know, the MPAA is so weird. You could show up eating somebody's brains for breakfast and they'd be like, yeah, that's fine. But then there's the famous thing from Hellraiser where they were told Clive Barker that he could only have 2 pelvic thrusts in the sex scene because 2 was art, 3 was pornography. So, Clive Barker's just like, what are you going to do?
Wow, that's a bit much. Yeah, I could totally... who knows what scenes they cut? Maybe there was, you know, longer scenes from the other, scenes, you know, the other sections of Waxwork. That would have been, like, neat to see, like, a longer...
Yeah.
Like, Night of the Living Dead one or any of them. Because I don't remember... I never saw which. But, like, it's... Like you said, it's all in there. It's just they're not focusing on it.
Yeah.
It's kind of like just like a passerby. You get to see them during the fight scene.
Yeah, you see everybody kind of do a little bit of something.
Now that I really think about it, did like Josh Whedon like this movie? Because in that movie, Cabin
in the Woods.
In the Woods literally is the same fucking fight scene, more or less. Like it's like all the things come alive and then all these, you know, they're all fighting one another.
They push the purge button and everything just comes out.
Yeah.
I hadn't thought about that, but yeah, that is probably where he got that idea. Where it's just like everything just goes crazy and they're out fighting each other.
Yeah, because it's a cool idea. I mean, you know, it's just one of those things, like, it's just cool to see, like, all these different scenes of shit. Like, oh, you know, you've seen Jack the Ripper, you've seen The Mummy in their own movies, you've seen this, but they're all in one. It's kind of like, you know, The Extraordinary Gentleman, but horror.
It does remind me, like, combination, like you said, the Cabin in the Woods and the Anchorman fight, where they're all, like... It's like, oh no, it's the mummy, and then he comes running in, and
yeah, he like steps on one of the like bandages, and he gets unraveled.
Yeah,
you know, kind of bullshit. That dude just reminded me of like Monster Squad.
Yeah, so there's probably a lot of things that this influenced later on, because I can see that even like some of the other stuff in Cabin in the Woods, where they're looking at the people in the cages, it's a little similar to like watching all the exhibits.
Yeah. Yeah, probably. Who knows? It's just, it's like, oh, you know, they want to be like, oh, no, I never saw that movie, or I never heard about it. Mine is an original idea.
Well, that's because no one wants to get sued, because you know the story about James Cameron, right?
No.
James Cameron, when The Terminator came out, was doing an interview with Starlog magazine, and they were recording it. And during the interview, they said, where did you get the idea for this? And he said,
Was it a novel?
He said, I had a dream that somebody was chasing me and they were trying to kill me. And then I remembered a couple of episodes of The Outer Limits and I combined those two episodes in with it. And Harlan Ellison, well-known asshole, read that interview and said, you know what? I wrote both of those goddamn episodes and you owe me money, motherfucker. And he sued him in court and got money for the Terminator and all the characters. And he got a byline and they had to add a credit saying, based on characters and situations created by Harlan Ellison. It's in the end credits.
Wow.
And I think he even got paid for the sequels, and it's probably still, his estate's probably still getting paid for the sequels.
That's intense.
And all James Cameron had to do was shut up. And it's one of those things where he tried to deny it and said, oh, I never said that. And the reporter was like, well, I do have the tape of you saying that.
Nah. Fucking Starlog. Damn you. Yeah.
That's I'm pretty sure that's how Harlan Ellison supported himself the last few years, because he didn't have a lot of big hits after Star Trek, so I'm sure that Terminator money came in handy.
Oh, goodness. Well, let me just tell you. This is, I give this movie, and because, you know, it's one of the childhood favorites, I give it 3 knives, and I give the sequel -0 knives. I actually want to stab it.
You can't do -0. There's just 0.
Is it an infinite zero?
You can do -1 knife, but you can't do -0.
-0. I feel like we have to make it possible to have it -0. That's how terrible it is.
No.
I want to deduct from nothing, which is nothing times nothing.
That would just be -5.
You're putting real math in a fake situation.
All right.
Fine. Well,
for me, it's a 3.5 knifer.
Yeah, don't watch the sequel. It's on Tubi or Vudu, one of those. I started watching it. I got maybe like 40 minutes in. I was like, I can't see any more of this. This is really bad. Zach Galligan is in it again.
The best part of the sequel is when Bruce Campbell shows up. They do a whole black and white sequence with Bruce Campbell. That's pretty good. But the rest of it is just kind of, eh.
Is it the Frankenstein's monster sequence?
I believe it is, yeah.
Because there's
a long time since I've seen the second one.
Yeah, because there's a black and white sequence, but it's Frankenstein's monster. And is it Frankenstein's monster?
No, it's like Bruce Campbell's getting like torn apart in different places. And
Yeah, there's a black and white sequence, but I could have sworn it was Frankenstein's monster.
I think there's probably more than one in there. Because this one is Waxworks 2, Lost in Time.
Oh, goodness. And do they get lost in time?
Going back to all the different... Gosh. Instead of just... Since the waxwork was shown burning down in the last one, they couldn't go back to it. So now they got to go back in time.
Yeah, they got to go back in time. Because the Deborah Foreman character, her... At the beginning of the second one, she asked like Zach Galligan, like they get in a, literally it starts off exactly at the ending of the first one. So they get in a cab and they go home, and she's like, is it over? He goes, yeah, trust me, it's over. She goes to her house where her like drunken dad is like,
that we've never heard of anything in the first one.
Yeah. Drunken dad is like sleeping in the freaking, you know, small apartment they live in. And then Zach Galligan goes off, but you don't really see. He just goes off, continues off to his house. Her, the hand of the freaking woman, one of the hands of the friends, like, follows her home.
Oh, yeah, and, that's right. It crawls in there.
Yeah, and kills the fucking dad. And Deborah Foreman literally gets put in jail because of it. She's on trial. And that's why Zach Galligan has to go. They both have to go back in time to like try to bring something back from and like prove that they, you know, had this whole thing happen at the waxworks and the things came alive and whatnot. So they that's why they have to go back in time, and like they stop at Frankenstein's monster, like they stop at the castle, and they're trying to bring the book back with them. But then, you know, that's when the freaking villagers come with the, you know, torches and all kinds of shit, and there's a whole whatever. So they had to like jump back into time, and then they end up in like in the future in space, and that's like the aliens.
Oh yeah, god, a bunch of ones.
Yeah, and I couldn't do it after that. I was just like, this is really terrible. Really terrible.
Yeah, the second one's got a lot of people that are notable in it too, but because Bruce Campbell's in it, Michael DeBar's in it, Marina Sirtis, which I had even forgotten she was in it. But there's a few people in it that you would recognize, but it's just not as good as the original.
No, it's not. I mean, you know, if it's a rainy day, you have nothing to do, or if it's like a party and you just have it on the background just for shits and giggles.
And since these almost always come packaged together, Waxwork 1 and Waxwork 2 together, you might as well just watch it because it came with your disc anyhow, so you might as well pop it in.
Yeah, I guess.
Because I'm a fan of the movies where they pick up right after the original like that, like the original, you know, Halloween 2, yeah, where it picks up. I love that. Even, I'm not the biggest fan of it, but the Hatchet movies all do that, where one, they pick up right at the end of the other one, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So, it's a great thing that they pull it off. It works really well.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for joining us in this episode where we discuss Waxworks and a little bit of Waxworks 2. Because that's all the time I wanted to give to it. Just,
that's all the time it deserves.
Just 5 minutes. So thanks so much and stay tuned to the horror.
And now, folks, it's time to say goodnight. We sincerely appreciate your patronage and hope we've succeeded in bringing you an enjoyable evening of entertainment. Please drive home carefully and come back again soon. Good night.